Hi, my name's Tanya. Welcome back to Fresh Out of Tokens. This is episode 3. This is our biggest episode to date because we have 4 guests and 2 hosts. And unfortunately, David is currently in a car driving to parts unknown, so you get double the action Jackson this week because Sharif Jackson has graciously agreed to sit in and be my co-host. So you got him as a guest in last episode, and now you have him as my co-host. Hi, Sharif.
I'm back, y'all. You know, this is great because this means I'm getting paid twice as much, right?
You mean twice of zero?
Twice is twice. You know, I'll be waiting for the check. Don't worry about it. I'll be waiting for it.
And you know where I live.
My negative money.
Well, you are the minister of no finance on Spawn on me.
This is very true. No finance is happening here, there, everywhere. You
know? Well, let me introduce our guests and give you guys a little bit of feedback, and then we can jump right into our discussion for the week. And we get Chris Algu back for his second podcast appearance. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, glad to be here.
Thank you. And Kat Small, who is awesome and who's done a TED Talk, also of Brooklyn Gamery and Code Liberation. Hi, Kat.
Hello.
And first-time guest for us is Arthur Ward, who's also known as Edible Toaster. Hi, Arthur.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. And last but definitely not least, Dennis Liaw. Please tell me if I said your name right.
You didn't, but anyone does.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. And that
no, it's fine. It's Liaw.
Liaw. It's doubly embarrassing for me because my day job is working with international students.
Yeah.
So yes, that is embarrassing for me. So I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
And Dennis is also of Brooklyn Gamery. So welcome to Fresh Out of Tokens podcast.
Welcome.
Woo.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
I will do very brief feedback because our second episode literally went up the day before we recorded this. So our best and most awesome feedback is we sound better. So individual audio tracks are awesome, and that's what we're going to keep doing. And hopefully the new mic makes a difference. So, again, once you hear this and have feedback, please let us know because we love feedback. And I actually want to, like, you know, read listener questions on the air for once. So please email us at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @outoftokenscast. And you can follow me and Sharif and other folks, and we'll give you all that at the end of the show. And don't forget that our awesome and very cute logo was done by Chachi Bobinks over on Twitter. And those items are in our I Need Diverse Games store, and we are splitting profits with her so she can get her car out of the shop. So please, if you can, buy something. Help Chachi rescue her car and help us stay afloat with our Minister of No Finance, Sharif Jackson.
Share that money.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, hosting these podcast episodes is not free, people.
I know. I gotta like.
The web space is there, you know. So definitely help out
cheap.
A great show. Yes.
Yes. So now that we have, you know, had our very brief feedback from our young episode 2, which, you know, you should go listen to if you haven't listened to it already before you listen to this one. So I just want to kind of welcome everyone to the show and then ask, you know, everyone who's here, who are you? What is it that you do? And since we have 4 guests, you know, y'all can duke it out who gets to go first.
Oh, God.
Fight.
Round 1, fight.
Go, Chris, go.
Hey, so I'm Chris. I was on the show before, but I'll just do an intro again, because that's always good. I'm 1/3 of the Brooklyn Gamery. I do music, project management, some programming, game design, all the fun stuff except drawing, because I don't know how to draw.
Aww.
I gotta get you a coloring book, man.
Thanks,
one of these days.
Thanks.
Cool. I guess I'll go second. I'm Kat, as was previously mentioned. And I also help to run Brooklyn Gamery. I do a lot of art, user experience stuff. I also love making games, and I teach people how to make games through Code Liberation. And I also do a host of other things, like working at SoundCloud and functioning and sleeping. So that's me.
Nice. Arthur?
Yes, I'm Arthur. I do a lot of experimental games things. I guess you could say I popper all over New York, at all the New York game stuff, see what everyone's up to, help out when I can. I was part of the Baby Castles crew for the longest time, running some really cool, I guess I'll say interdisciplinary, like, things like that. Stuff with games and indie games and local music and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Cool. And last but not least.
Oh, yeah. I'm Dennis. Hi.
Hi.
I program everywhere in my day job. That's what I do.
Just all over the place.
Program all the things.
Cool. I know.
Yeah, so you guys are Brooklyn Gamers. I'm assuming that you guys are either met in Brooklyn or the company is in Brooklyn. What's the association with Brooklyn and the Brooklyn Gamers?
Oh, man. Should I go for it? It's really funny. We had gone to a game jam, and we knew that we had a good product coming out of it. We won runner-up, and we were going to finish it, and we needed a studio name. We happened to be in Brooklyn at the time, and I thought it would be really troll if we called it Brooklyn Gamery and we made fun of, that
Creamery, Brewery.
Yeah, like the pretense of Brooklyn and all that stuff, but, it just worked.
So, like, do you guys all live in Brooklyn?
Two of us do, actually. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And, one of us was born in Brooklyn. We were all actually born in New York, if I remember correctly. So we all have New York affiliations. Brooklyn has been the place for games, so we figured it just all worked out really well.
Cool. So I'm a Jersey boy, so you might hate me by that definition. I did live in Brooklyn for a number of years out of college because... literally about half of my graduating class all moved to Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Yep.
And I lived in Leopard Garden, so not technically there, but had a couple of Brooklyn questions for you guys.
Sweet.
What you think about it. And I'll try not to keep it too insidery, because obviously there's a lot of people listening that are not from Brooklyn.
And your co-host is not from Brooklyn.
I know, but, like, you know all.
So. Oh, God.
All right, so I lived right across the street from Prospect Park, which is the main park in Brooklyn. I lived on Ocean Avenue. It was awesome. So my thing was that I thought that Prospect Park was actually a better, more awesome park than Central Park in Manhattan. Do you agree?
It's pretty nice. I don't know if I would say it's better than Central Park, because that's really hard to do. Central Park is massive.
Yeah,
but I do really love biking in Prospect Park. Like, it's amazing. And I would definitely bike there over Central Park basically every day.
You can also make it around Prospect Park pretty quickly, because it is in several million city blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like people talk about Central Park all the time, but they really only go to the same parts of it. Like,
yeah.
It's not like people are traversing through the entire, like, you know, like 70 blocks or like however big it is from like 57th to 110th. Like, they're going to like the part near Columbus Circle, and they're going to the zoo, and they're going to Summer Stage, and they're going to the hockey part up near Harlem, and that's it. So I don't
know.
I'm a big fan of Prospect Park. I love that place. I just wanted to get at least one Brooklyn question off. only one. I could take the whole podcast. Ask about your most hated subway lines,
there you
juniors,
go.
And all that kind of stuff.
You know, that would have been a
go
better
there.
Question. We can go there.
We'll just follow up on Fresh Out of Brooklyn.
Exactly. Because I got some stories about that little S shuttle to Franklin Avenue.
Oh, my God.
The one that's not working right now? Yeah.
What a wonderful train.
Yeah.
Hey, I've been on that shuttle.
Oh, you have?
I did, because my friend that I stayed with lives in Brooklyn.
Oh,
yay.
Yeah, it was a very interesting station where all kinds of activities go on.
Okay.
That might not be good for the Fresh Out of Tokens podcast.
Oh, we're all adults here. I'm sorry. Have you met me, Sharif?
I have met you, but I'm family friendly. Okay, I'm a G-rated man.
PG-13.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I will let you take the next question, Tanya.
I'm just still laughing at you being G-rated.
I'm G-rated.
Yeah, you trying to be OG? Is that what you're trying to do, Sharif?
I'm the G is for gangster. That's what I'm saying. I'm the G is for gangster.
Oh my God, they're going to put us off the air.
Explicit tag on iTunes. Let's go.
It is, actually.
It's now rated OG.
This is rated OG.
That's going to be the tagline. This podcast is now rated OG.
Rated OG.
So, Arthur, you're actually not affiliated with the Brooklyn Gamery, correct?
Nope, not at all.
So, I'm curious, what led you into game dev?
That's a long story.
Okay, give us the condensed version.
I think it all started only because it's all started because I think my dad was doing tax accounting. Was an accountant, and then he jumped on the whole computer stuff really early.
Mm-hmm.
Then so I was like, I'm this little kid. Like, oh, here, play this game, and it's basically Snake or whatever. But then it turns out to start Snake, you have to start this funny program thing. And then there's this text everywhere. I was like, what's this text here? And then I changed my name, the name on the thing, and then suddenly, I was like, oh, people make these things. fast forward years later, I started figuring out how to do stuff, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's so cool. Was it like an Apple IIe or something?
It wasn't that fancy. It was this big, gigantic, tan box. It was funny.
Oh, wait, Pat
nice.
Bell.
Yeah. I think the first time I really did that was, I think, on the... I used to subscribe to this magazine called 3-2-1 Contact. I don't know if anyone, remembers that magazine.
Oh, my God.
But they used to have basic programs in the back. So you could do in, your 10, go to 20, and all that kind of good stuff. And that was the first time I actually, understood that you could put something in that would, turn the screen orange or something like that. I mean, obviously the programs were very, very basic, but that's what I did. So I wanted to talk to you guys a bit about this Black Game Devs directory that I've seen floating around here. So I know that Sean Alexander started the hashtag Black Game Dev, and I've seen that, kind of promoted on a bunch of different Twitter sites and stuff. So what led you guys to create this directory of Black Game Devs?
Yeah. So I think it was right around the time that Game So White, the hashtag, started. And we'd before kind of talked about this stuff, and just the fact that it's really isolating sometimes to be a Black game developer or any kind of game developer who is different in some way, because it's just you feel it a lot. You go to events and you feel the difference in how people interact with you, and so you can feel really alone and lonely and frustrated. And at the end of the day, we all want to make games, we all love making games, but it's so important to know that you're not the only person out there. And for me, it's I know Sean, I know TJ, I know some other people, I know Arthur, and you just, have those five people that you can name off, but they're, I think we all kind of thought, there have to be more than this, and how do we show people that they're there and direct them to them so that they can actually support those people instead of saying, oh, there aren't enough people, or, name, 20 off your off the top of your head, here's a list of, 130 people, that's the kind of thing that we wanted to do so that people understood, we're not alone. There's a ton of us out there. We just need to, surface them and give them a platform, even if it's just a list of names that people can check out, and not, going really in-depth into their game separately, because, unfortunately, we all kind of have day jobs. But we just wanted to at least give people a place where they could go and say, oh, look, there's so many of these people here. for people who are black game devs or other game devs of color, they can say, wow, I'm not alone in this. Like, there are more people out there than I thought, and they can learn something new. And then for people who are not people of color who are working in game dev or otherwise, now they have a place where they can go and say, oh, wow, I didn't know there were these many people. And they can also throw their money at them. We just want them to throw their money at them, get them on stages, get them doing stuff because they're out there, and now there's no excuse anymore. So.
Awesome. Yeah, because I watched the list go from a few names to quite a few. Do you know offhand how many are on there?
Last I checked, I think it was about 130, if I remember correctly. But we have gotten a couple more requests, too, so that number is going to keep going up. I think now it's going to, like, increase a little bit, like, actually way slower than it did before, because there was a list going on another site called, I think it's called, like, the Coley. And they have been keeping a list for a while, and we, like, Arthur and my name were on that list already, but we figured if there is a website that people, when they go to Google and they search black game developers, if there is just a site that is there with good SEO for it, then that could be really helpful. So we kind of, like, merged in a lot of those names as well. But yeah, we still have some people that are like requesting to get on it, and we're trying to make that process as simple as we can for them and for us to like add names really quickly.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's really awesome. And I will definitely be tweeting that out both on my Twitter and I Need Diverse Games for you guys, because, you know, we exist. There are black game devs everywhere. And you all can't see it, but Kat did like the most awesome power fist.
We're here.
Yes.
Yeah.
So seeing as how you have so many names on there, have you gotten a lot of good feedback on the list? Have you, you know, has it been like, hey, this is awesome, I didn't know there were so many other devs like me?
Yeah, well, around when we initially launched it, it really just kind of exploded across Twitter. It got a couple of sort of very significant retweets, and the initial couple of tweets, both when it was just a list with an unattractive GitHub URL, and then once we got the blackgamedevs.com domain, like, both of those just spread really far and wide over the internet and got us a lot of attention.
Cool. Now, of course, there's the opposite question of... Oh, I'm sorry, I cut someone off.
Oh yeah. I was actually going to mention this thing, because... I'm one of those big TweetDeck people, so I have like columns and columns of like stuff, and every now and like one cool thing I saw was someone was offering like help for some, was offering someone like, hey, do you want music? I'm a composer. I saw your name in the list, and it's just like, I just like seeing cool interactions like that, and it's just kind of like, you know, I mean, sometimes it's just the little things really, and I remember seeing other comments people really are just glad to see that, hey, they're more than just me. You can go to an event in the area and you're the only one, but now you know that, like, you know, you're not the only one who's the only one.
You're not
meta.
There can be only one.
What is it? Caliph called Paris. Was it the Negro Highlander?
Yes. He did call him Negro Highlander. Yes.
Oh my God.
So I'm saying, everybody has to walk around with a sword, man. You never know when it's gonna go down. You never know. You know, it's like the same thing with like me working in like corporate IT. Like sometimes you're used to being the only black person, that other black person comes in, you gotta have a showdown. There could be only one. You gotta break out the swords.
For me, I'm like, we just like point at each other and we're like, we like run to each other like crying.
Nice. Every day.
Yeah, it's like you're here.
Just a daily cry. So we know that there's been a lot of positive stuff, but as we know, like, whenever you try to interject issues of, you know, diversity into games, there usually is some negative feedback as well. And this I'm not even talking about the sort of extremist Gamergate kind of people. I'm just talking about just like regular people that think that, you know, games should not have any discussions of, you know, like, who cares who makes it? It's just a game and like all that kind of stuff. So have you guys seen sort of any pushback or like any negativity around the creation of the directory?
Yeah, so a lot of, well, like, we didn't get a ton, which is awesome for the most part, or I could have, like, I certainly tuned out as soon as, like, one of the tweets hit, like, 100 retweets. I was just like, I can't even look at Twitter right now. But I do remember a couple of people saying, like, I just don't understand why you're doing this. Or, like, this makes me kind of uncomfortable. Or, like, why is this thing even necessary? And, you know, I mean, I took time, a little bit of time to just kind of explain, like, hey, you know, sometimes you're the only person in a room who looks like X, Y, and Z, and that's really uncomfortable, and people need to know. You know, and just kind of explaining it and being like, you know, if you still don't understand, that's fine. Peace. Like, have a good day. Generally, like, that was the end of most of the conversations. No one really, like, railed much harder than that. And so that was kind of comforting. Most people are, like, either like, yeah, or they're just like quiet, and maybe they just get that, like, it's, if it's not their thing, they don't have to, you know, try to shut it down. But yeah, there are definitely some people like saying, you know, I don't know why this thing exists, and I don't think there needs to be a list like this.
Well, yes, because I was just thinking when you guys were talking, I've been at my job almost 5 years. Until the last year, I've been the only Black person in my office. And while I'm not, like, in the industry per se, it gets real old real quick being the only person of color in your office.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just love representing for, like, my entire race and sometimes gender at all times.
Oh, so, yeah, you get that fun mixed bag.
You're the diversity.
Yes, I am the diversity. Actually, like, when I started working in tech, I was like, people have to hire me because not only am I awesome and, like, I do amazing coding stuff, but, like, I immediately make their, like, organization, every single organization I go into is, like, 100% more diverse when I walk in the door. And that's kind of sad, but it's true. So, I don't know. I mean, it was really uncomfortable, and I have since obviously matured a little bit and said, wow, this is wrong. But when I was starting out, I was like, I am a 10 million, like, I'm like a really large asset to people because, like, I do really good work, but also, you know, there's some added bonus there. But I really don't want to be the only person, at places that I work, you know, like, it seemed fine at first and it was like a super great selling point, but now it, like, just the more you have to deal with it, like, it just really eats at you.
Definitely. So now that the list is out there and growing, have you, like, do you have kind of an end game with the list, or is there anything you're trying to specifically achieve by creating the directory? Bueller, anyone?
Chris, you
want to
do it?
Yeah, sure. Well, like Kat mentioned earlier, we've all got day jobs and we're all pretty busy, so the amount of time that we can invest in it is relatively low. I think right now what we want to do is just keep expanding the list and keep spreading the word about the list. It has a lot of benefit and it really seems to show a lot of people that, you know, there are Black game devs out there. Outside of the list, we are talking about some events to sort of spread some awareness and spread some game development knowledge to some areas that the words, sorry, I speak. But we do have some stuff that we're planning.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the biggest thing was as soon as we started the list, people were like, hey, can you add this to it and this and add this new feature and, like, make it a shiny pony? And we're like, okay, we don't... Unfortunately, we don't have time to make it a shiny pony, but it is open source, so if you want, you can totally go in there and, like, add some sparkles. But I think what we like, our scope, personally, at least on my end, and I've kind of, like, ranted about this to the guys several times, but just, like, We just wanted to have, like, a place where people could reference, and if someone wants to go in and make, like, a whole feature blog and that kind of stuff, that's kind of something that is going to take a lot more work, but is also kind of out of the scope of what we can maintain. And we're just trying to be really realistic about how much we can do, and unfortunately, we really don't have the time to make, like, a whole editorial kind of thing and add more content to the internet, as wonderful as it is. But yeah, I mean, I definitely know that people were really excited and they really want us to do more. It's just like, we want to make sure that we're really investing in the right things and taking and spending our time, like our really precious time that we kind of like split between so many things, that we're really spending it on like on the right stuff. So events are going to be awesome. And I think there are ways that we can really continue to help people, that are outside of just like the internet presence of blackgamesdevs.com.
Very cool.
Awesome. Now, how can people add themselves to the list if they're a developer of color and they want to be included on this list? How can they go about adding themselves?
We have a couple of ways where people can do that. If you're up on GitHub and programming in general, you can submit a pull request and just add it directly to the code, and if it looks good, then we'll be able to just merge it directly. Otherwise, you can create an issue on GitHub, which is essentially like leaving us a note, and that's a lot easier to do. Or if you're just super GitHub averse, then you can totally just tweet at us and hopefully we'll see it.
Okay. So I just want to kind of check in and see what's kind of on deck next for everyone, and I realize Dennis has not had a chance to say much. So I'm like, you're all quiet over there in your corners. So I'm going to be like, hey, what you doing over there?
I'm looking at right now at the open issues. We currently have 5 submissions for blackgamedevs.com.
Woo.
So
cool.
Nice.
You know, if you know how to do it, you submit a pull request, which is like you can add bits of code. And if they align with ours, they merge without issues. But thankfully, if that's not if that's not an option for you, you don't know how, you could open the issues. And so we have 5 people that want us to add their names to the list.
Nice.
Yeah. Sweet.
So that's what I'm working on.
thank you, Dennis.
Well, aside from adding people to the list, like dev wise, like or day job wise, what's on deck next for everyone? Wow, don't everyone talk at once.
Who wants to go first?
Tell us about all your evil plans.
Go, Chris, go.
Well, Rant. Now that Prism Shell is on iOS.
Oh my god.
Yay.
Oh.
For
it happened.
$1.99.
That's right, plug
don't
it.
Have to spend
plug
kids
it.
College funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so we finally got our game up on iOS and stuff, so I guess we're going to try and do this whole marketing thing, which none of us have really done before,
pew.
So that's going to be interesting. We also are just starting to look into what we're going to do for our next game, what's it going to be, and all that fun stuff.
Yeah,
sure.
I love how when you search for Prism Shell, the graphic is of the game over screen.
Oh my god!
No. I didn't know if like that was like you're gonna die
we're
on
gonna
these waves
that.
A lot. So here,
but
see,
you
isn't
also
that awesome?
Do die a lot in our game. See, like I tried to change it, but iTunes Connect is I can rant about Apple's development system all day. So that's what I'm going to be working on next, is when we release the next version, because we do have some fixes that we need to release. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to fix those images so you actually see Beretta first, because Beretta is awesome.
Yeah. It's a very awesome character design, and I like played some of this on Android, so like seeing it on the iPhone is definitely dope. And so congratulations. I definitely hope that the sales are good and that you maybe get that featured iTunes front page type thing, maybe. Who knows?
That would be sweet, looking at you,
That'd
Apple.
That'd be cool.
Yes, so everyone listening, you've got $2. You spend that on a latte at Starbucks. Go buy this game.
I'm pretty sure they spend like 3 times that on a latte. Point
cheaper than a latte.
Go buy our game.
Okay, so you could buy either 2 copies of this, one for yourself and one to share, or a latte. What do you think will give you a better investment of your time?
Not the one that makes you shaky.
Exactly. I'm trying to help you with this marketing thing here.
It's a good idea. I might go tweet that.
Yes. Two lattes or two copies of Prism? Or one latte or two Prism shells?
You decide.
Yeah, tweet that Kat had a little while ago that was actually based on something Arthur said, where people were totally willing to pay $15 to see a two-hour movie, but not to get a five-hour video game.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
I feel feelings.
I have feelings too.
That was for Ground Zeroes?
Oh, no.
No? Okay.
I was more thinking of like, you know, a lot of small projects, a lot of smaller projects get made, like a lot of small indie games and stuff like that. A lot of them are around 5 hours long, and you pay $10 to $20 on them, and it's like, oh, I don't know, is it worth it? I played this game for 100 hours. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Steam reviews. If you ever read Steam reviews, they're kind of great. They're great being depressing. But yeah.
Yes. Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. No, I definitely think that there's like this like valuation thing that some people just look at the price and don't consider the fact that they're going to spend lots of time on these games. Plus, obviously, people need to be reimbursed for making it as well. So it's like, you know.
Yeah.
People seem to forget about that part and say, oh, like, you guys are just doing it for the passion, for the love. You don't need to be paid for this.
I don't need to eat. I don't need to pay rent. Video games pay my rent.
I know.
This passion like, sure is delicious.
Yeah, exactly. I can go to the bank and withdraw some passion right now.
And this show has suddenly taken a turn for the dark. Well, you know, it is evening while we're recording, so hey, anything goes.
True.
Oh. Fresh out of tokens after dark.
Fresh out of the house.
Oh my god. Oh my god, this is awesome. So since we already kind of covered what's next in the pipeline, which is what you guys are deciding on, I will turn over the gaming news segment. I feel like I need that old typewriter noise from like movies. Yes. I have to find that sound effect now. I'm going to turn over the gaming news to Sharif Jackson.
Thank you, Tanya, for turning over the news to me, Sharif Jackson. There, see? Yes. Oh. Nice. There's the sound. Yes. That's why a mechanical keyboard is useful.
Oh, my God.
All right, so the first piece is... I want to talk in that voice the whole time, but I can't keep it up. Plus, I'm black, so... All right, so the first thing is, so we know that a lot of people with both the Xbox One and the PS4 at this point have been complaining that their 500 gigabyte hard drives have been consumed with not only games that they buy, but games from PS Plus and Xbox One, games for gold, and like all that stuff. So Sony recently announced that there will be a 1 terabyte version of the PS4, which obviously follows Microsoft's announcement of the Xbox One one. So you can already upgrade both hard drives if you want, right? I mean, if you have the wherewithal to go in there and upgrade it. So, like, what are your thoughts on Sony announcing this 1 terabyte version? Is it something that you think is a good move, or is it something where gamers that want this would have probably already upgraded their systems?
I wonder what the intersection is between gamers and people who are comfortable opening things up and putting hard drives in things. I mean, I imagine it's pretty high, but I'm not sure. I definitely upgraded my hard drive during my PS3 days before my PS3 died. Tears.
Rip in peace.
But I think it's it could be a really cool thing for people who are less technically inclined but want to get more video games on their PlayStation.
Yeah, I think people who... I'm going to be that jerk and be like, people who would have wanted this, or people who would have wanted to upgrade their PS4 would already be having PCs and building their customs. But yeah, no, I think it's really good for people who are like, you know, haven't jumped into PS4 yet because they thought that there wasn't going to be enough space, and they were right. And now they can finally throw their hard-earned cash at this. And then there's a bunch of people who just need to suck it up and figure out how to cut open their PS4s.
Actually, funny thing is, actually, the Sony actually has docs on how to replace the hard drive, which I thought was just kind of cool.
Nice.
But yeah, anyone who wants a, like, probably wants a PS4 coming soon is like, hey, might as well pick up the 1 terabyte one. Hopefully, this also means the 500 gig one goes down in price for those who, you know, want a PS4, but, you know, don't want to pay the full price for it. I mean, and trust me, I know a lot of people are going to probably now get a PS4 probably next year because that's where all the fighting games are going. So
yeah, that is true. I still can't believe Street Fighter is a console exclusive. I never thought I'd see the day.
Don't worry. Yeah. Don't worry, Sharif. We can have matches. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good move by either Sony or Capcom or both.
Right.
It's just amazing. This is like Street Fighter. It's not a console exclusive game. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's an okay move. I mean, I think it's obviously great for like new people, but honestly, like ever since I've been using Steam, if my hard drive gets like filled up and like I have like a 2 terabyte drive, you know, I've gotten the process. I'll delete a game and reinstall it later. I still feel like console gamers are still getting used to this, so they feel like they have to keep every single game on their hard drive, and I'm like, yo. Get rid of your freaking Infamous Second Son and like these other like launch games that like you don't play anymore. Like, you know, just get rid of it. And download it later if you need it. I mean, I do that on Steam all the time.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, you know, I got my PS4 at launch. But for me, the issue is if I buy a game on disc, why are the files still being copied to the hard drive?
Because the disk drive isn't fast enough. I think that's what it is. I really think that's what it is that, like, the speed of a Blu-ray drive cannot stream those textures and assets fast enough at, like, 1080p and somewhat near 60, since they kind of don't get there all the time, but...
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's been frustrating because most of my copies of games are digital for the PS4, which is, you know, different than the Xbox 360 because I've got a huge 360 library and a 250 gig hard drive that's not even half full.
Yeah.
Huh.
But.
Think of it.
And Arthur goes to check.
I'm like, I've just realized, like, I don't think I have a single PS4 game disc, and I have a pile of games if I were to think.
Yeah.
I totally just download all my games now.
Yeah, exactly. The only disc I have is for The Last of Us Remastered, and that's because I got it on a deep discount at like a Goodwill of all places. So,
oh wow!
So,
huh.
It's a shame that the discs don't unlock the digital copy of it.
Now that would be awesome.
There's no reason why that wouldn't.
No. It's like the same way how if you buy a Blu-ray movie, you can unlock the iTunes version.
Yeah.
You know, with a code. Yeah. There's no reason that they can't do that. And like GameStop would still get their money because that's the only reason we have discs is so freaking GameStop and Walmart can.
GameStop can sell games.
Pre-orders. So really, what's the difference?
Yep.
Yeah. I have feelings about pre-orders. I actually. Well, I stopped doing
Kickstarter.
What?
I said, you mean Kickstarter?
No, I meant like legit pre-orders from the companies, not Shenmue 3, because I made a face at the screen when I saw that shit. But that's a whole other. If we get into that, we'll be here all night, and we all have day jobs to get up for. But you know, speaking of gaming and all of that stuff, there was really sad news out of the gaming sphere this week. That Tale of Tales is shutting down after sunset. And so it brings the question, again, is can artistic-type games be commercially viable? I mean, Gone Home was probably the exception.
Yeah, I mean, I think my hope is that they still make other stuff. And that, like, when they were like, we won't make commercial games, like, I don't know if they're going to... I hope that they'll still make stuff. And they still make art things, but they just maybe aren't going to touch games anymore. And I totally understand that. And it makes me really sad. But it's true. Like, it's really hard to make money off of these kinds of things, and like people don't really want to fund games in the same way as they want to fund other types of art, and a lot of people already have issues with like funding art in general. So, you know, I feel for them because, like, I am also, like, a kind of, like, a classically trained art design person, you know, and I really appreciate, like, the kinds of interactive experiences that they were making. And Aria Harvey is, like, an inspiration of mine as a game developer, as a black woman in games. Like, she's amazing. And so it was really sad for me, but I totally, like, I mean, in Belgium, I guess they were, like, funding more of those things, but here they don't really do that already, so like I could understand if like the funding dries out for art games and kind of interactive experiences like that. I just, you know, it's, I don't think it's possible for them to survive, so it sucks.
It's a real shame.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, because she gave a talk at IndieCade last year that was really inspirational. And, like, as a programmer, when you look at the things that they were pumping out, like dynamic terrains based on, like, just the makeup of a website, like the code in there, it's some really interesting stuff. And I don't know. I think gaming culture needs to catch up to where they're at. And it sucks that they have to shut down as a result of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's especially a shame because the game was, you know, kind of a critical darling, right? So like it got the attention of the gaming press, which a lot of people say, well, a lot of video game, you know, a lot of these games that the press kind of rants about kind of increases sales, but it seems like in this case, I think they were saying they only sold about 4,000 copies, including the Kickstarter versions, and including the ones during the Steam sale that I think is still going on now. So yeah, it's a shame because this is the game that they really put like a PR budget and marketing and like all that stuff that they didn't do with like The Path and like their earlier games that were also great. So yeah, I mean, I think that there's still, you know, obviously there's going to continue to be weird artistic games like Stanley Parable and, you know, and like Telios Principle and all that stuff. But as far as putting sort of the money behind it that you would a commercial game, I just don't know if the industry is responding to that as a whole. And I think that's a sad thing. I definitely agree that I think the rest of the industry needs to catch up because if we want, you know, gaming to survive, we got to have these diverse, you know, game experiences that aren't just, you know, like your shooter, like your racer, and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I was really sad by the news, especially because the last video I did was on Sunset, right? So
yeah.
So like I was like, damn it. So
yeah, because there's a lot of really good material in that blog post. And listeners, if you haven't already read the sort of official Sunset blog posts from the Tales of Tales website, it's really interesting whether or not you're involved in creating games. One of the things that always stuck out to me was that they hired a marketing firm, and the marketing firm did their marketing thing, and it got them a bunch of press and a bunch of attention, but that didn't translate to sales.
Yeah.
I think that sort of speaks, like, there's sort of a lot of narratives around games and game development, especially when you watch movies like Indie Game the Movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. This, you know, just all these things where, oh, if you have a lot of passion and you work really hard, you'll be a success and you'll be in a movie. And you know, that doesn't always happen, especially if you're making something that's outside the standard video game mold.
For sure. And the other thing is, like, people... So this one conference I went to, and this has been circulated a couple of other times, but, like, they always say, like, oh, a bad game that gets good marketing is going to do better than a good game that gets bad marketing. This was, like, a really interesting good game that got good marketing and it didn't work out, and that was just really devastating and terrifying to me as a person who, you know, it, like, I don't know, it just made me feel really morbid and frustrated because it's like, you know, if a game like this gets great press and does a really good job at marketing and they still don't get like that mass of people actually paying, like, you know, how, like, what? You know, it's so confusing and just, yeah, frustrating. And, you know, I mean, there is no formula, obviously, but, like, we're just all trying to figure out, like, some way to kind of survive, I think, as people who want to make these interactive experiences in these kinds of games. And, you know, I guess it just feels like this little thing kind of, like this bit made it feel a little less possible.
Mm. Wow, that's really sad. Oh my gosh. but no, it's a real though. I mean, like, this is what, like, you guys live, right? I mean, you're doing game development along with your day jobs, and yeah, I know that this is something that, you know, probably affects you more than, you know, more than the rest of us here. So that definitely, that, thanks for sharing that, Kat. I appreciate that, because, you know, it's
feels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know Arthur also has like a ton to say about these kinds of things. Arthur, take it away.
Take it away, Oppo.
Could totally do 3 shows off of this thing, but yeah, because like the thing with like art, you know, artistic style games and stuff like this is, you don't know, and actually even the games market in general, you don't know what people will, basically attach themselves to. You don't know what they will want to, you know, support and fund and everything. Because if you think about it, you can go into Steam right now and you see like a bajillion things there, and it's kind of like okay, people are unsure of new experiences, and they don't know whether or not they will enjoy these new experiences. They don't know if they because a lot of these artistic things are telling these stories. They're showing some really like really amazing and interesting things that are just a lot of these are experimental, a lot of these are they're not proven, and because they're not proven, you know, none of the big guys want to do that. You'll probably never see like any like big major publisher release anything like, say, Sunset or any of their other games, for example. And it's a shame in a way that like everything is so tied down to like, if this does not sell, we're not going to do something if you don't guarantee sales. And so when we have like, you know, smaller groups like, say, like Tales of Tales, and soon I can't wait to see what Brooklyn Gamery does with you know, experimental stuff like this. And if you try to make these really cool, like, well put together polished experiences that are new and different, and if they don't do well, I mean, you don't necessarily have that much to fall back on, like, you know, the big guys do. And the funny thing is, I think they're probably in a similar situation, but in a different way, in that if they don't spend like outrageous amounts of money on this thing, and they have to prove that, hey guys, we spent the most money in this game, you should buy this. And it's like, oh yeah, this game only, like, I'm trying to remember this thing. I forgot what game it was. It sold in like 3 million. It's like, this is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
3 million.
I'd love for three million people to just even like click on my website. It's like, hey, check this one thing out. You don't have to buy it. Don't buy anything. Just don't buy anything. Just look at it.
3 million
dollars.
Yeah. It's just mind-boggling, and I think I still have this sentiment that, you know, the games industry is still young, and everyone's still figuring stuff out. Will we figure it out? Who knows? One day, yes, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
You don't know.
I'm thinking of other industries, like,
yeah.
Thinking of film, photography, and other art forms, like even writing. Writing's really interesting right now too, especially with like all these funny ways of self-publishing. And it's like, I wish I knew numbers on that side. It's like, how well do people do with this? So, mm-hmm. I don't know. As sad as this is, it's like there's a lot we can learn from their studios shutting down and everything. And I'm just like wondering, like, I'm glad they wrote a little bit of what they learned.
Yes.
And I'd be, it sounds bad to say this, but I hope, like, maybe other people can learn from this and, like, so in their cases, they won't end up having to shut down or change focus madly. Change focus as drastically as they, as Tales of Tales had to do. And, I don't even know what to say anymore. It's just,
it's tough. It's a toughie.
Yeah.
No, I think that you guys shared a lot. So, you said a lot. So, thank you so much for that. So speaking of, I know we talked a little bit about pre-orders and stuff. So, the next question, Batman Arkham Knight, one of the most anticipated games of the year. Be the Batman, Rocksteady finishing the trilogy, all that good stuff. You know, this game has, like, gotten really good ratings. I mean, Polygon actually gave it a 10, which is I wasn't expecting at all.
Really?
So, the console version. So
I bet they regret that now, don't they?
Yeah. So the big thing about this is the PC version. The PC version has been an unmitigated disaster. And this wasn't just sort of whiny PC gamers like, oh, I can't run it at, you know, 120 frames a second or whatever. Like, this is people that struggled to get a consistent 30 frames a second on their, like, GeForce 980 cards, which are not cheap, you know. So basically, like, Warner Brothers took the, you know, drastic step of actually suspending PC sales, which is only a couple of days since it's been available, which I can't recall I've ever seen before this quickly after launch. Like, especially now in this era of, like, day one patches and stuff, usually they'll just patch it, which means that this was in some really serious trouble. So I've heard kind of blame thrown in sort of a few different directions. I've seen people blame Warner Brothers because, like, they're the publisher and they have the final say. I've seen people blame the developers, which were Iron Galaxy, who actually did the port to PC. And I've seen people blame customers that pre-order these games because they say that if you pre-order it, they have no incentive to do any quality checks because they have your money anyway. So I was wondering where do you think the majority of that blame should lie for this kind of disaster, if it lies with anyone?
Does anyone else have feelings? If not, I have things to say about blaming people for pre-ordering.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Sure.
Go.
I have some thoughts. I think I'm inclined to lay it at, you know, the publisher's feet. I think, you know, people care a lot about the games they're working on, and I'm sure a lot of people from the QA department filed a lot of reports that were ignored because, oh, we have to make our launch date. Let's just push the game out. And they push the game out, and it's really bad.
Yeah.
I think, it's like, I mean, that sweet Batman skin or whatever else you get, I mean, that's pretty great and all, but you are giving them your $65 to just, like, hold on to for a couple months. Like, that's just so capitalism.
Yeah.
And the other side of that is, I think pre-orders kind of force release dates to be sooner, right? Like, you don't want this to be Duke Nukem Forever.
Oh,
if I pre-order, I don't want the game to come out 10 years later and still holding on to that receipt. I'd feel a certain way about that. So yeah, preemptive sales, that's the downside of them. Like, yeah, you can kind of secure capital, but at the same time, like, it also pushes up your delivery dates. And that's a dangerous thing.
Yeah, because I don't know if people know this, but if you pre-order, like, on the PS4, you pay when you pre-order versus, like, GameStop or Amazon, where you're not charged until it actually ships. So, yeah, because, like, that's why, you know, when I was way more into pre-ordering, I still wouldn't get anything on the PS4, because, like, look at Dragon Age Inquisition. Everyone had it, you know, set for October, and then it got pushed back a month, and people lost their damn minds. You know, granted, I was going to buy the game anyway, so that may not be the best example of, you know, pre-ordering and then being salty when it's pushed back. But, you know, for some people, pushing it back a month or 2 months, maybe that makes a difference of whether or not they can actually get the game.
Yeah. Like, that's my kind of thing about it is I think I have such a mixed feeling about it because, like, I used to participate in pre-orders all the time, but, like, you know, it really does raise people's expectations, and, like, when you fail that and say, oh, sorry, you know, we have to keep working on it because we found that there are game-breaking bugs, people just really don't understand that, and they're just like, I want my game now, but they don't realize that there are, like, probably, you know, hundreds of people trying to work on this, and there are, if they just, like, wait a couple, like, another month, then the game will actually function, and it will be awesome. But, like, people just really, I don't know, I mean, there's, like, a really interesting kind of, like, connection between, like, people, like, their investments and their time. And I find that it also happens a lot on Kickstarter, for example, where people set, like, really, you know, unrealistic release date estimates. And you never really know how long your stuff is going to take to make, but you should probably multiply whatever you estimate by two. But people just don't know. Like, you see this happen all the time. No one knows what they're doing. No one knows when their stuff's going to come out. And, I mean, I like, totally understand where, like, I can definitely see, like, if the publisher was like, we need it on this date. We said it was going to happen on this date. And they were just like, well, we can't really do any more work on this game. We've been, like, staying up until, like, midnight every night for the past 3 months. Like, our developers are probably all dead. You know, there's only so much that you can do, and that's the pressure it puts on people. And there are human beings behind these companies, you know, and
yes,
they're probably
definitely
all really, like, just not okay right now.
Definitely.
If you want to see them, they're actually in Chicago, the Iron Galaxy guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can sit outside their office and watch them sweat as they walk past.
Well, I think Kat said they're dead, so I'm looking forward to some, right. Zombie, to some zombie developers.
Inside, they're dead.
Corpses.
Yeah.
I'm curious how big that group is, though, because I know they have, I mean, they've done a great job with Killer Instinct so far.
Exactly.
Now I'm a little afraid of the PC port, but I kind of am looking forward to it.
So as soon as this happened, I went to their page to look at some of the games that they worked on, because I know I've heard of them doing ports. And they did the port, the PS3 port of Destiny, which is actually pretty good, like, considering how old that hardware is. It runs really well. And, like, you know, they have a good history. So it's hard for me to believe that they intentionally would put out a product that they know has these errors, unless the publisher said, hey, we need to get this out.
Like now.
Yeah. The pre-order thing, I mean, you know, I don't pre-order that much anymore unless it's something that I know I'm willing to deal with issues, you know, because I think the whole problem with, like, pre-orders is when people are entitled and they pre-order and then they complain. It's like, if you pre-order, you can't complain. And, like, and that's the same thing with, like, a console. You don't buy a PS4 day one. Mm-mm. And then complain that there's no games to play and that you need patches for 6 months. Like, that's how every console launch has been.
Same with operating systems. You don't just, like, you don't day one access any operating system because it's going to be terrible. You wait 2 months or whatever amount of time, and then you download it because then they've done all the crash testing and everyone's had their problems and they fixed all the security bugs. Like, you just don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people want to be early adopters without understanding what that means, you know?
Yep. Even day one purchasing is kind of scary now.
Yeah.
Totally.
I don't want to blame anyone who pre-orders, because, I mean, it's like, oh, okay, cool, I can just buy it, it'll be downloaded immediately, or I'll get it shipped from Amazon immediately when it's released. And then you get the release, and it's like, oh, this wasn't what I wanted. This isn't good.
This is bad.
Again, even games that weren't pre-ordered. I'm thinking back to the the Street Fighter 4 re-release on PS4.
Oh, yeah.
That game is how many years old? You'd expect, oh, day one should be fine.
Yeah, it was bad.
Like, funny thing is, because this technology is great, I actually bought it on the way home, because I was like, oh, let me just use my PSN app, because I know I'm going to play Street Fighter when I get home, so let it download to my PS4 while I'm going home. Oh, boy, I turned on the thing, the menus were moving at some ridiculously slow speed, probably slower than I'm speaking right now.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was a mess. The PC thing. I was looking for Arkham Knight. I was looking into the game. It's like, wasn't this an Unreal Engine 3 game?
Yes,
people been using this engine for how many years?
Forever.
Wow. I know there's different variants and stuff like that. I'm sure this game had a lot of modifications to the thing, but and I'm hearing side stuff that like they didn't give them that much time to port it over, and that might be a thing too. Because first you have to make sure the controls work for PC that PC players would want to have. Because like you have to support controllers, you have to support mouse and keyboard, and if you didn't design from that from the beginning, you're gonna have a lot of tweaking to that. There's probably some console-specific tricks you put into the engine code or something like that, and it's like, oh, this won't work on your typical Windows or... it's only on Windows. No one releases it on Mac.
Boo.
Well, there's a long story to that. No, And I mean, I know that. Yes, you set a release date, and you say, all right, you send out all your marketing stuff. Someone finds a last minute bug. It's like, oops. We can't get half the stuff working. So what do we do? We'll just cover this up with something else, and then hope that no one notices it until we can patch it. And of course, everyone's gonna notice.
Everyone notices it.
Because day zero patches are becoming a thing. Where I was like. I just got this out the box. Why is there a patch? What the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
Certification, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. Even Arkham Knight on the console, I think, had a 4 GB day one patch, which probably fixed some of the stuff that's in the PC version, because PC hasn't had any patches yet. I mean, so they're just...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because I do know, like, they...
It's just in between when the game goes gold... and the time it actually hits the shop, someone finds a bug.
Right.
Of course.
15 people sweat for, like, just the whole day. Sorry, Arthur.
Oh, it's all right. I was remembering, I know a lot of the reasoning for the day one console patches are because it's quicker to certify a patch than it is to certify a full game, so let's just certify a build of the game so that Sony and Microsoft say it's ready to go, and then we'll just patch it day one. Fine. PC though is like wait, Valve just tells you to press the button and you're there, so
wow,
why is that?
It's different.
Wow. And on that cheerful talk of the game industry, I think we should probably wrap up this episode. Any kind of last remarks about Black Game Dev List or anything you guys want to say to the listening audience before we get into where everyone can find y'all on social media?
Get Prism Shell.
$2. Only
$2. Put your name on the list. Put your name on the list. If you are a Black game developer, do it.
And we will have both of those links in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely go to blackgamedevs.com, share it with your friends, add yourself if necessary. It's an important thing to be able to see and to be able to show others.
Buy their games, please.
Yes.
Buy their games.
Yep. Okay, I think we've had a great conversation. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Yay.
Thank you, Sharif, for sitting in with me and being my co-host on this third episode.
Absolutely. Thank you. I can't promise that I'll be on the fourth, though. I don't know if people can. I don't know if they can handle three straight Sharif shows. So we'll, I'll back out for now.
Well, since you brought up our fourth episode, I'm very happy to say that we will be talking with Tariq Musa, Catherine Cross, and Austin Walker about Games Critique as a Person of Color.
all-star
so
panel.
Awesome.
It's going to be so good.
Nice.
Okay, I might be on the first one.
Put Dave in a car.
I'll get a knock on the door to be Sharif. Like, what you doing? I want to be on this show.
What's up?
Yeah, but I'm super excited and stoked, and I'm going to totally go into fangirl mode. I'm sorry in advance, y'all. So, but to end our episode, can everyone let folks know where to find you online and social media?
Bueller. All right. So you can find me on my Twitter handle is catsmalls, cat with two T's. And I also have a website, catsmall.com, Code Liberation, Brooklyn Gamery. Check them out.
No. Oh. Periscope. You can find me on Twitter, Edible Toaster. I talk too much. Or you can check out my site, which is, well, there's gonna be a site there for now, but there's gonna be a site there soon. But it's gonna currently go to my itch.io, but go to arthurwardjr.com and there's gonna be cool stuff on there soon. Hopefully this weekend.
Yay.
Yes. My Twitter handle is Chris Algu. My website is chrisalgu.com. It has some of the stuff that I've worked on in music and games and other areas. And Brooklyn Gamery is on both Facebook and Twitter.
Yep. As for me, you can find me alongside the other two. Or actually, we hang out all the time. Arthur.
Yeah.
And my Twitter handle is dlizzles because someone is squatting my real name on the fucking. Ooh, sorry.
Whoa!
Oh, you can cuss. You can cuss. Feel free.
Rage.
Awesome. This really is rated OG. I love it. dlizzles, dlizzles, and yeah, I just spam programming jokes all day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you can find my personal Twitter at Cypher of Tyr, CypherOfTyr, or at I Need Diverse Games at IneedDivGMS, and of course this podcast at Out of Tokens Cast, because Fresh Out of Tokens would not fit in a Twitter handle.
Whoops.
Yeah,
unless you got rid of every single vowel.
That was
Fresh Out of Tokens.
Oh my god, I should do that as a joke one day.
Oh, Sharif.
Oh, and Sharif, where can people find you?
So you can find me at sharifjackson.com, S as in Sam, H-A-R-E-E-F as in Frank, jackson.com. That'll have my science blog, Science Looks Good, my gaming YouTube series on diversity, Gaming Looks Good, as well as my podcast, Operation Cubicle, where we talk about geeks of color in the corporate workspace. So check all those out. I'm also a frequent guest on the Spawn On Me podcast, which is at spawnon.me, which talks about the video game industry with a focus of people of color in the industry. So yeah, check all that stuff out, and hi.
And with that, we are done with episode 3. We really look forward to having everyone back at a future date. And if you want to come back and talk about game dev, what you're doing, you know where to find us.
Hey.
Sorry, we'll edit that part out. And then for you, dear listener, please give us feedback at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. Rate us on iTunes and Stitcher so we too can be awesome like the Spot on Me blog and be in the top 10 of podcasts. So
true. Shout out to them for making that top iTunes list. That is not easy to do.
Yep.
Yes, it was awesome. So I'm very excited. And with that, we are done.
Woo!
Yay!
Woo!
Yeah!
Yeah!
Woo!
Blatant these hoes, but these hoes ain't rising, cause they know that I will eat them up like a python. Chew on them, sit about them just like I like them. A evil became with all the school that I'm rising. So you think you're cute with your wig and your boots? I've got more style than those pastel pantyhose. I'm just a cartoon, but I'm building up a monarchy to invade the hearts of otaku patriarchy. Ha 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 ha, you think I'm joking just because